Today's episode was brought to you by the Harper Home Team, a realty team covering San Diego, Orange County, and Riverside County since 2000. A family business born and raised right here in San Diego with over 1,400 homes represented. And guess what? They're Padres fans. I know this because they're the team I personally use for all my buying and selling of all the homes that I have. I have so many homes. And we've talked a lot about Fernando Tatis Jr., maybe too much. More on that a little later in the show. If you're looking to buy or sell your home, call the Harper Home Team now. 760-456-5846. That's 760-456-5846. Or just go to harperhometeam.com. You have the internet. You can do this. harperhometeam.com. You get a free consultation to build your home buying roadmap. Do it.
Hey, I'm Scott Lewis, host of Voice of San Diego podcast and a Padres fan. If you like the kept faith and keeping up with the latest on San Diego sports, I think you'd like my show too. Every week I get together with my co-host to talk about the latest politics and policy. We try to make it fun and interesting, who's making the biggest decisions for our region, and we unpack the most important stories we think San Diego should know about. We release episodes every Friday, and you can subscribe wherever you listen to this show. Again, it's Voice of San Diego.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell and his voice.
Tatis for life, Nick. Tatis for life.
Yeah, Travis has been screaming since, Wednesday?
Yeah, since the news broke.
Yeah, that's, you can stop now. It's okay.
I did it.
We're also joined by Dallas McLaughlin.
Oh, hello. Yes, Tatis for life, my friends. It happened. It was supposed to happen, and it happened.
Yeah, we shouldn't have recorded that night. We had nothing. We couldn't talk.
But, we're just in shock, you know. We're just what are you going to do? I mean, as the season inched closer to starting, I just had this horrible feeling in my gut that it wasn't going to happen. That we were just, you know, the team was going to try to sell us on trading Tatis after this season, and we were going to fall for it. But that's not the case, Nick. That's not the case. Yeah.
Well, we're joined once again by the bro of bros, the reporter for San Diego, the reporter for the AP, Bernie Wilson. What's up, man?
Not much, hermanos. What's up with you?
We're just living the dream. You know, we locked up our superstar. Now it's time to fix the rest of the city. How you
doing? good luck.
Yeah. So what are you wearing tomorrow to the press conference, or?
I guess I gotta wear like a collared shirt in case I, you know, get picked to ask a question. You know, most Zoom, it's a Zoom thing, so I always keep my camera off. That way, you know, people can't see that I'm either not paying attention or multitasking or
naked.
I do wear a shirt because apparently there was a scribe who got caught shirtless on a Zoom last season, and I won't say who it is, but it'll mess up your mind for years if I tell you who it is.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, you know, the news dropped, and you're going to be covering one of the faces of baseball moving forward. What's your opinion of Bebo so far? I mean, you've covered him for a few years now. Do you think this kid is the real deal? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Bebo, as you guys know, the Padres have been absolute crap for 15, 20 years.
Yes.
Well, let's not, you know, we're not here to put a happy face on recent history, are we?
No.
I would hope not.
No.
No, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I've wasted a good portion of my career covering the Padres. You know, there have been highlights like this, that Tony Gwynn guy, one World Series, but, you know, for the most part, the last 20 years have been utter crap. And it took Bebo, Tatis Jr., and Machado to, and, you know, finally an ownership group that, you know, is willing to spend, willing to take chances. And it's, you know, the lead I used several times now can keep doing it is Tatis has made baseball fun again in San Diego. Yeah. And that's not to diminish the other guys on the team, but he is certainly the focal point you know, just, you know, key obviously is to keep him healthy. I mean, he didn't even get through his rookie season without having to be shut down, but he is fun to watch and he's fun to cover. And, you know, it's about time that, you know, us, even us long suffering scribes out here in, you know, the, on God's coast, but it's usually late at night on the in the rest of the country when the Padres are playing, you know, we get something fun to cover. You know, again, I'm still not a fan and we're not allowed to be fans, but it does make a huge difference when you cover a team that is good and interesting as opposed to one that's utter crap. So, you know, that's a huge upgrade for the creaky old Dodgers in the press box.
Yeah. Yeah, are you having conversations with your editors about like how to cover this guy and kind of show him to the rest of the country? It seems like
No. I mean, I have a feeling that he's Tatis Jr., Bebo, El Nino, whichever you prefer, is going to be a lot like Tony Gwynn, and I'll be able to, you know, write a story on Bebo and the desk will gladly accept it, because I remember, you know, when Gwynn was still playing, I, you know, pinged one of our baseball writers and said, hey, I'm going to send you in a story on Tony Gwynn. And it's like, yeah, good. Okay. Yeah. We'll definitely use that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, there is heightened interest and, you know, it just depends, you know, you got to see how it plays out, but obviously he's already been a big story nationally. You know, the unwritten rule, the controversial grand slam, the, you know, the two homers against the Cardinals and the backflip, you know, the matrix slide back into first base. That was his rookie year, I believe, right? The scoring from second on, you know, a pop-up, that sensational play he made out in left field against the Astros last year. So it, you know, people have already taken notice, and, you know, it's not whether we focus on him more. We just continue to do our job in covering, you know, all the highlight plays that he makes.
Yeah. You know, since we've locked up Bebo for this long, I mean, it does make me think a lot about Tony Gwynn and just the moments in his career where he had to make a decision if he wanted to stay or not. I mean, did you cover some of those contract negotiations or extensions with him in the 90s? Do you remember a scenario where he,
I covered most of them. I covered half of his career. I took over down here in 91. So there are definitely some extensions. He made the San Diego discount famous. I remember that, you know, he was happy and comfortable here. He'd already been to one World Series. You know, I know that the rest of baseball didn't like it, a lot of the other players and agents, because, you know, they had to, you know, fight that notion. Well, why don't you want to stay with your team and, you know, be happy and whatnot. So, yeah, I remember it was an issue sometimes, but, you know, it wasn't an issue with Gwynn. He wanted to be here and he was happy and, you know, off he went. So, yeah. You know, it, again, it was a bigger deal elsewhere than it really was here.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's really an interesting time for the Padres. You mentioned earlier, you know, this is the first time in a long time that you've been able to cover a team that is willing to really spend and put money on the field. Have you noticed a difference between just the overall tone of the organization since Ron Fowler has stepped away and Peter Seidler has taken the forefront, other than writing checks? I mean, do you notice a change?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I delve too deeply into that stuff, but, you know, Peter, I think, has always been, and not that Ron wasn't, Peter has always been the one who said, yeah, we want to bring the community a championship. And, you know, Ron has said that too, but I still remember the picture from the press, or the day, the, the Machado con, the news of the Machado contract broke, and Uncle Ron, the Sultan of Suds, and Pedro, Peter Seidler, were over in Peoria, and they had a press conference, and, you know, Ron had his usual dour look, and Peter, you know, looked like he, like a cat who just swallowed a canary, was sort of a shit-eating, right? And with a shit-eating grin on his face. And that's the Pedro Seidler that I've gotten to know. It's like, you know, he's not out there seeking attention, but he and throw Ron back in too. They've been willing to, you know, put this coin out there and you know, be willing to take, you know, some body blows here and there, but they do want to win. And I think they understand that these are my words, that they owe the community a championship. They weren't the owners during all those terrible years, but they had a couple of lean years, but you know, I think Peter is going to continue to, you know, pursue what they all started together. And that's, you know, trying to win a championship here in the city of losers or the city of championships, you know, remember AJ Smith had the title Lord of No Rings. One of these days, San Diego's got to break through. I mean, we can't live off Little League World Series championships forever, can we?
I mean, Jimmy Johnson. Whoa. Jimmy Johnson, buddy.
Jimmy Johnson. But you know, Jimmy's a great dude, but all those are done elsewhere.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Super Speedway out here in El Cajon. There was Cajon Speedway. If Jimmy had won a NASCAR championship at Cajon Speedway, that would have been huge. And he is a native son, but I'm talking, you know, a team based here, you know, now we're down to one professional team. And then the Aztecs can feel free to win a natty and something sometime soon. But you know, for the moment, you know, people rightly should remember the 2009 Parkview Little League team with Big Luke and those guys slamming home runs. But let's not forget the, you know, the La Mesa, El Cajon, Northern Little League with Brian Sipe in 1961 that won it all too. It's now Fletcher Hills Little League, but you know, so I'm wandering a little bit, but the point is, I think the Padre ownership realizes, you know, this city desperately needs a championship, and now it's up to them.
Yeah. Would you, I mean, in your years, many, many years covering the Padres, you know, I guess 98 might be similar to this, but like, have you experienced a year and like the anticipation for a team as much as you have for this team coming up?
Yeah. 98. You know, and that's what I think people need to realize is, yes, this is exciting. Yes. This could be an all-time team, but you know, Twitter wasn't around in 98. A lot of the fans, I get the sense, were too young to remember 98, but there was definite a buzz around that 98 team. You know, I still remember the Kevin Brown conference call after they traded for him, how down he sounded on having to come to the Padres after they had, you know, the Marlins had just won the World Series, but that was like the missing piece. And, you know, it didn't have the hype. I mean, the thing about Tatis that's changed the equation is just, you know, his flair, his enthusiasm, you know, his willingness to drop a big giant FU on the unwritten rules of baseball and the stodgy keepers of the game who, you know, think it's a sin to smile. That I think that's what is his, and I love that. I'm 62, so I could fit into the fuddy-duddy category, but I absolutely love the flair he plays with, and I love the Latin flair. You know, the World Baseball Classic here in 2017, that week was the funnest baseball I've covered ever, you know, with the enthusiasm of the players, the fans. So I think that's the element that Bebo brings. But the 98 team was incredibly talented. I mean, it had two Hall of Famers on it. You know, it had the Caminiti Finley factor, the Kevin Brown factor, the Greg Vaughn factor. And thems were players. I mean, that was a group of, you know, that was big time baseball. And it was, you know, I still remember Vonnie Presson to hit his 50th homer. He finally got the last day of the regular season. You know, I got to go on the road with them to Houston and Atlanta, and they were an absolute afterthought coming into those playoffs because, you know, Houston and Atlanta had, you know, put up great numbers. And then for them to take down the Astros and the Braves and face the Yankees, that was a huge deal. And then, of course, it all fell apart. But yes, you'd rather lose a World Series than not be in a World Series. So I get the sense that, you know, a lot of people do seem to be forgetting the 98 team. They were either too young or they just weren't around. But that there was a buzz in this town. And I still remember, you know, telling my boss in New York after game two, I said, I'm not going to see you again because this series is not coming back. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I still also remember how juiced this city was before game three, how loud it was at Qualcomm and the white towels waving. And, you know, my brother came down from Idaho. I got him tickets. He had to park way over on Zion Road and walk over because the parking lot, he didn't get there in time. But this city was nutso in 98. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if this, you know, the Bebo Express can get it back, then good for them.
Mm. We're going into a season where the Padres and Dodgers rivalry, they would like to say it's not a rivalry, but, you know, this is going to be a big storyline in Major League Baseball. How do you plan on covering that? You know, the first series that these two teams clash, it seems like the baseball world is going to be looking at it very, very acutely. So what does anything change about your coverage when you cover something like that on that level?
Nope. Absolutely not. I mean, you know, you really, it's one of, you know, let's start throwing out some cliches here. You know, it's 162. The first game will be one of 19 between these teams. You know, and, you know, I can have some fun on Twitter and I, you know, whoever wins that game, I'll declare we'll go on to win the World Series, but in my AP copy, I certainly can't do it. You know, and so you just, I mean, obviously there's heightened interest and I can write that it's, you know, going to be a massive story all season long. But again, see, there's the, you know, you can't assign too much hype to one game. I mean, obviously neither team wants to, you know, get pounded regularly by the other team. And there will be, you know, you really can't, even at 162 games, you can't waste one game when there's seeding and home field advantage of play, but you just can't let a one game overshadow the entire series or, you know, the season in general. I still remember Steve Sachs, you know, this is how old I am. I got to cover an opening day at Dodger Stadium in probably either 89 or 90. And,
hey, Bernie, you know, Bernie, you can park all Steve Sachs stories right here.
Yes.
Anytime.
Do you like Sachs?
Very oh, fond yeah. of Steve I mean, Sachs. I think about him every day. Yes. But let's.
I bet you, you know, Sachs and I are connections on LinkedIn. He reached out because he wanted me to do a story. I did. You know, how cool is that? That
yeah.
Not only But if you remember Bernie Nichols of the Kings, we're LinkedIn connections too. So, you know, afterwards, if you guys want to pivot to LinkedIn and hit me up, I'll accept your connection.
Nice.
So, but anyway, you know, Sachs, he got tired of the line of questioning because they lost. He goes, you know, what the hell are you guys getting at? We still have 161 left. And so, you know, I think that, you know, for this is huge. It'll be huge for the fans. But for the media, we've got to keep it in perspective, you know, that, yeah, it's big. It's going to be a rivalry, whether the Dodgers think it is or not. But it's, again, it'll be the first of 19 between the teams, one of 162. And, you know, and don't forget, there are other teams out there playing too. So you can't preordain a World Series champion, you know, whether it be the Dodgers or the Padres, and then, you know, forget about the Atlanta Braves or somebody else. So,
yeah.
You know, it's
good for the fans, but we the beaten down scribes in the press box, we have to keep it under control a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, with this rivalry, the last manager that we had, Andy Green, got shoved by their manager on camera. But you know, what's your opinion of Jace Tingler after 1 year of covering him, you know, from a distance? But I mean, you have to work around these guys. What's your opinion of year after year one of the Jace Tingler experience?
I like him a lot. That'd be a great name for a band, wouldn't it? Jace Tingler
experience. Yeah, I'm jamming right now with some people.
Who do you think? Who do you think the bass player would be?
Skip Shoemaker.
Yeah, Skip Shoemaker for sure.
There you go.
The glue.
Although
the glue.
He seems to be too live wire for a bassist. I'd go with Rothschild.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sort of like.
He's got an nth twistle vibe. I think.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly. I like Tingler. He's he's low key. He gives us what we need. And I thought that he did a great job, you know, being a rookie skipper. Love that phrase, but we can't use it with him anymore. Having to deal with the stop start nature of last year and the uncertainty and all the COVID stuff that they had to do. And then, you know, you're managing a team, you know, you had at least two superstars, Bebo and Machado, and you know, now you add Darvish and Snell to the mix and whatnot, as Sean Burroughs would say. But I thought he did a good job of, you know, he just seemed, and again, we saw it from a distance, always on Zoom, never in person, but he really just seems to be low key and in control. And you ask him a question, he gives you an answer. And that is all we can really expect. And I thought he did a great job of it. And I, you know, not to break my arm, pat myself on the back, but I gave him my first place vote for manager of the year. Obviously he didn't win it, but from what I saw, you know, he certainly deserved it. He went, you know, handled all the difficulties of a COVID year and got his team to the playoffs. So, you know, but he's good to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. Dallas, do you have something?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, just moving away from the Padres for a second. I mean, and besides the Dodgers, is there another team that you possibly have seen or heard about that you're kind of, you think might win it all in the NL? I know a lot of people are high on the Braves, but is there anything else you think could challenge the Padres or Dodgers?
You know, I haven't really delved that far into it, Dallas. I've been, you know, too busy covering Bebo and the boys. But obviously, the Braves are a good team, and you never know about, you know, a team like the Nationals could come back. Mm. You know, that's the whole thing of a 60-game season. It didn't really give everybody a realistic sense of normalcy, for sure. I mean, I know there was some chatter from Walker Buehler yesterday or the day before where they feel like it was sort of the thought going around, it was like half of a championship. I mean, look, the Dodgers did what they needed to do in the playoffs. Nobody can take that away from them. I know Padre fans would like to put an asterisk on it, but our good friend Dave Pelle will never let people forget that, you know, yeah, it was only a 60-game regular season, but they got the wins in the postseason that they needed. This is a Mike McCoy type analysis. to win the World Series. So, you know, but the Braves are formidable. And again, going back to the Nationals, if you give a team the 162 game runway, you know, you just don't know. And you know, and people shouldn't forget, teams can stumble. I mean, there's no guarantee that the Dodgers and Padres are going to be world beaters in October. You just don't know. Yeah. I mean, look at the injuries to the Padres, you know, losing Clement and a Sunshine Clevenger out of their last regular season starts. El Flacco, that's another great nickname. Clement didn't come back. Clevenger tried to come back, and, you know, it was lights out. So that's, again, why you can't, you know, and I don't –
want to tell the fans how to fan, but from a media perspective, it's back to being a marathon, not a sprint. So, you know, don't get too juiced up in March when October is an awfully long ways away still.
Yeah. Well, hey, Bernie, you know, they're tearing down your old stomping ground, the Qualcomm Stadium, formerly known as the Murph, formerly known as San Diego Stadium. They're tearing it down piece by piece. I think they've gotten to the press box already.
So, I think the press box is gone.
Yeah. So what are you feeling about that? I mean, it is, you know, the house that Bernie built, that press box. Let's not play games.
You
about
know,
it,
I've got to admit, as much as I dumped on the place the last couple of years, it's hard watching that. I mean, yeah, there's just any memories there. You know, the thing that comes to mind is anger at the city for letting it get to that point. And I guess the anger at the Chargers for not wanting to help keep the place up. Anger at San Diego, again, for not being able to get anything done. But there's just a ton of memories. I mean, there was something on MLB Network today about, well, just now before I came up into the Bernie zone to do this. Oral Hershiser setting that record here, the consecutive scoreless innings, that was in San Diego. There was something else on that was in San Diego. But whenever you see any highlights of 98 or 84, you know, it's like, man, that's all gone almost. And it's, they gave us a tour in October, San Diego State did, and I'm really glad they did because we got to, you know, they pretty much gave us the run of the place under COVID restrictions, of course, but we got to go down to the locker rooms, the clubhouse, up into the press box, down on the field, into the, some of the funky tunnels underneath that we knew were, you know, we used to have the run of the place, but a lot of people didn't know they were there. But it's, and the way they're tearing it down, it's just hard to watch. You know, yeah. It's literally a death of a thousand or a million cuts to see them just having to, you know, blast it apart foot by foot almost. But, you know, it's practically 30 years of my professional career. Now, granted, I bitched a lot because, like, the last game that was there was at the Holiday Bowl in 2019, and it was cold. And the last two Holiday Bowls were cold and wet and miserable. And I remember cursing the place as I walked out, but never did I think. I mean, we all thought there were going to be two more years of the place, but never did I think walking out after watching SC getting its ass blasted off by Iowa that would be the last, you know, time I filed a dispatch from the old barn. But you know, and kids growing up here, you know, memories are running up and down the ramps. We took our kids there for a bunch of Padre games. They love the ramps, and I think there's only one ramp still left standing. And what really angers me is the Rolling Stones are supposed to open their 2022 there on May 8th, and you know, after fighting the Ticketmaster hassle the day they went on sale, we got three fairly decent seats. And you know, that was the first victim of one of the first victims of COVID was concerts. And, you know, and then when San Diego State announced they're shutting down the old place, Stone said, see you later, you know. And so that's what bums me up the most. But yeah, it's hard to watch the slow demolition. I tend to care for the environment, but I think it would have been good to just blast it and, you know, take your chances with the Clean Air Authorities. but it was old and uncomfortable, you know, the press. And that's thanks to Spanos too, because they moved the owner's box from the far side over to the press box side sometime in the 90s and gave us a real uncomfortable setup. I always did want to throw my chair out of the press box and never got that chance.
Oh, damn. Yeah, I mean, I guess you can't, like, can't just bump into Saw anymore over there, just in the hallway, right?
Nope. You know, and you know, I do have happy memories of Saw. I staffed the first Fleet game. You know, remember the legendary San Diego Fleet?
That was the last game I was at.
Center. Was it really?
Yeah, the last.
Okay. And it was rainy and shitty.
Yep.
Yeah, and their home opener was, you know, a typical winter rain and wind, and I was just there to do a feature, but saw myself and Eric Williams, our good buddy, you know, who used to cover the C-Words and is now covering, I think, the Rams for Sports Illustrated. We posed for a group picture in the press box. So, yeah, we won't be seeing Saw there. And I took over Saw's seat at Petco Park due to COVID spacing requirements. Oh. So I hope I'm not pushing a legend out the door.
Well, I mean, you know, it's Saw is like the wind. He just comes in and out as he pleases. And it's...
Oh, yeah. And you know, I haven't seen Saw on any of the Zooms, but Saw has a very, very impressive pile of books in the background when he's on Zoom.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, Bernie, thanks for coming on. Is it a margarita night or an IPA night tonight to finish it off this week?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. That's become my tough decision every day, is whether it's IPA, margarita, or gin and tonic. I've sort of pivoted to gin and tonics lately.
Nice.
I don't know. No, after almost a year of being cooped up, I've just got to start for the hard stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Love me the Bud Black IPAs, but you know, there are times when you just need two or three gin and tonics.
Yeah, I feel ya.
How about you guys? Well, just real quick, down the order, what is it for you guys tonight?
I'm doing a Hefeweizen Paulaner. I don't know. I'm going European German stuff.
Yeah, I was doing mimosas and then now hitting the Percocets. So
nice. Yeah, I like that a lot.
He's having more fun than us.
I might have. Yeah.
Travis might be dead, but
what about you, Travis?
I am. Travis, I don't want to call
hand signs. I
don't want to call it an addiction, but the Belching Beaver Phantom Bride is one of the best IPAs I've ever tried. I can't get enough of it. So that's mine.
Nice.
Nice. Cool. Well, hey, Bernie.
Nice lid, by the way. Yeah, down there.
That's right. Yeah, it's a great hat. Oh, yeah. Well, hey, we're gonna get going. Hey, thanks for coming on, Bernie. We'll check in with you later this year and see how it's going as the burn turns. You know, just
anytime, and we'll try to keep you up on Bebo as best as I can.
We're going to go to a break, but after that, we're going to come back with a new segment called the NL West House. We're going to talk to a Rockies blogger, a Rockies podcaster, Ryan Latica. He is a podcaster for the Locked On Network. So listen to this and we'll check it out. All right.
Listen, if you're looking to buy or sell your home, I can't recommend the Harper Home Team enough because I use them to do both. They held my hand every step of the way, literally, because buying a home or selling a home can be scary. It's frightening, all right? Don't judge. This is a judgment-free zone. Jason and Rachel at Harper Home Team, they make it easy. They're honest, they have competitive commissions, and they're easygoing because they're born and raised in San Diego. They get it, all right? No constant calls, no constant texts. They know what they're doing from the start with over 20 years of experience in Southern California realty market. Give them a call right now, 760-456-5846, or just go to harperhometeam.com, get a free consultation using realtors who actually know who Fernando Tatis Jr. is and also have a strong opinion on Eric Hosmer's future. Do it now, harperhometeam.com.
You're now entering the NL West House, presented by TalksChrome.com.
All right, we're in the NL West House for the first time, sponsored by TalksChrome. Hey, Dallas, what's TalksChrome?
It's this Yellow Card album that came out in 2003.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah, it's a banger.
it's a show. It's a great show that Nick and I are both on as well. And our buddy Sean O'Donnell puts it all together. We rip baseball cards, man. It's great. It's on YouTube and Instagram and Twitter sometimes. But YouTube is really the place to go. TalksChrome on YouTube. It's great.
There's this exploding collectible cards market that we're both learning about through our friend Sean, who's obsessed with it.
It's so weird. It's so
you're
weird.
Interested in getting in? Yeah, check it out. TalksChrome.
Check it out.
Yeah, check it out. All right. Well, our very special guest, the first episode or the first segment of the NL West House, we have on Ryan Latica from the Locked On Rockies podcast. How you doing, Ryan?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we wanted to have you on to learn about your customs and your ways as a lifelong Rockies fan. We wanted to start a healthy dialogue between our fan bases. What's it like covering the Rockies beat right now in 2021?
Oh man, it's certainly interesting. I mean, I took over as the host. I joined the Locked On Podcast Network right at the beginning of December. But I mean, I've covered the Rockies starting in 2017. I wrote for their fan-sided affiliate, which is called Rockspile. So I contributed pieces for Rockspile starting in 2017. Kind of got away from that in 2020. But I just now took over as the host of the Locked On Rockies podcast right at the beginning of this past December. And certainly an interesting time for sure to just take over a daily podcast talking about the Rockies on a daily basis.
Yeah, and it seems like maybe you know what the Padres have felt like for a long time. Yeah. With this December.
Yeah, if you want to learn how to deal with it, you can check out our entire body of work. So yeah, Ryan, you know, basically the big news that happened in Rockies world was losing Nolan Arenado. You know, he is the second best defensive third baseman in the NL West for so long. And that's a joke, guys. I'm just kidding.
I was about to say, like, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that.
Honestly,
it's your podcast. I'm not going to correct you on that.
In this world, you know, Manny is just better. But tell us what it was like when they did make that initial signing of him to that huge contract. I mean, it wasn't always bad. There was a time in Rockies land where that was really, it must have felt kind of similar to what we're feeling today with, you know, Tatis being locked up for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Rockies, you know, they signed Nolan Arenado to that enormous extension. I believe it was $265 million over the course of 8 years. That happened right before spring training started in 2019. So the Rockies were just coming off of, you know, two playoff appearances. You know, it was really the first couple of playoff appearances that I actually remember being able to, you know, experience and watch and be a part of. With this team, but like emotions are high, you know, I mean, yeah, they had just gotten swept by the Milwaukee Brewers in the 2018 NLDS, but like emotions are high, you know, like we're right in the middle of this contention window. We got this really good core. And then all of a sudden the news, I mean, I remember I was sitting in my apartment in Phoenix, Arizona. And when the news broke and I was, you know, so excited, I was like, cool, we got Nolan for 8 more years. And then it turns out, you know, that they had also, you know, I mean, obviously you guys know about the opt-out that was in there, you know, coming up after the 2021 season, but you know, a lot of people don't realize that Nolan didn't ask for that opt-out. That opt-out was put in there by the general manager, Jeff Breidich. So that was a little bit fishy. And no one really understood kind of why the general manager would push for an opt-out like that. But I mean, you know, anyway, the Rockies had, you know, had just convinced Nolan, you know, to sign an 8-year extension. And you know, they had promised Nolan that they were going to build around him. Now, obviously that didn't happen. And that was part of the reason why the relationship between Nolan Arenado and the Rockies general manager, Jeff Breidich, soured so quickly. And I mean, you know, obviously, in the press conference that they had put on right after they traded Nolan, Jeff Breidich and Dick Monfort had put on a press conference in which they said that Nolan had requested a trade 9 months after he signed the extension. So that just really kind of gives you a look into how quickly that relationship soured between Arenado and the front office. And there was a column published by Ken Rosenthal that said they weren't even talking by the end.
I mean, to get into that a little bit more, you follow these guys every day, you know, like we do with the Padres, but we also don't hear about it. We hear snippets about the Arenado situation. And, you know, you said it comes down to them not building around Arenado, but I mean, what that just seems such like a cop-out. Like, what, you know, it's not even a season and he's already pissed off at what they didn't go out. Like, do you know any specifics about like what they passed up possibly that would have pissed him off so much?
Well, so essentially what happened was, I mean, so Nolan, after the 2019 season, which obviously was, you know, was really not great for the Rockies. They lost, I believe, 91 games in 2019. And so Nolan, I mean, this came out in story, you know, Nolan, you know, met with the Rockies front office and, you know, essentially was like, okay, well, you know, what are we going to do to make this better? You know, what are we going to do going forward? And, you know, they weren't going to do anything, you know, and that's that, you know, and that's evidenced by, I mean, you know, Daniel Murphy was the last major league free agent that the Rockies signed. They signed Daniel Murphy on December 21st of 2018. They have not signed a single major league free agent since December 21st, 2018. Yeah. So, I mean, they just, you know, they simply just stopped adding, they stopped building, they stopped spending money immediately after signing Nolan to the extension. And that's what pissed him off so much, is because, you know, he felt he had been lied to. And that's, you know, probably, I mean, you know, obviously you heard about the quotes where, you know, he said he felt disrespected by the front office. And I mean, obviously, you know, he never went in on specifics on that, but, you know, at least what I believe is that was a big part of it, where, you know, he said that, you know, he signed under the impression that that the team was going to build around him, and it just simply didn't happen.
I mean, you have to excuse us, because I think up until about 2020, I believe every Padre has said, "I feel disrespected by the front office." So this is something that we hear all the time in San Diego.
Yeah. I mean, we're embarking on this long relationship with Tatis Jr. tomorrow morning, actually, it sounds like, but, you know, we're going to be locking into this relationship with this player. I mean, something that is in the back of my mind is, you know, how could this relationship sour with the front office? I mean, when this is happening with Nolan Arenado, how are the fissures between the front office and him manifesting themselves in the media? Are people being tipped off to anything? Are there certain quotes that are coming out for people that are really looking at it every day? And is the fan base starting to get worried way before this ultimately happens, where he gets traded?
I mean, honestly, so let me tell you about this. I believe it was in January of last year. And I remember, cause this had happened pretty much right after Larry Walker was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
As he should have been.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having that opinion. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, come on. We're not monsters.
Yeah, cause that was very well deserved.
I mean, he wrecked our lives at, Jack Murphy Stadium for like years, a decade.
Absolutely.
Brutal.
But so, you know, it happened in that same month where, I mean, obviously, you know, the trade rumors had started to kind of swirl in the 2019 to 2020 offseason. And then, you know, in January of 2020, I believe it was, you know, Jeff Breidich had put out, you know, a public statement saying, "We're no longer going to try and trade Nolan Arenado. You know, we envision him being a Rocky, you know, in the 2020 season. And we're, you know, we're not, you know, we're closing the book on a trade for Nolan." It took about 45 minutes after that announcement for Thomas Harding, who is the Rockies beat writer for MLB.com. Thomas Harding published a story like legit, not even an hour later, with that quote that Nolan feels disrespected by the front office. But nothing really came, like, you know, again, Nolan didn't really delve into specifics on you know, why he felt disrespected. So that has been kind of up in speculation. But that's, you know, and there's another great Rockies podcast that I listen to, the Purple Dinosaur podcast, which is hosted by Tyler Mon and Anthony Masterson. Tyler Mon writes for MILB.com and Anthony Masterson works for Fox Sports. But I mean, you know, they said it the best on their, you know, they entitled it their doomsday episode. But, you know, essentially they're like, you know, we need to know, you know, exactly how this relationship got so sour so fast, because nobody even really knows, you know, what happened really behind the scenes there.
Yeah.
It seems like back, I mean, you know, we play fantasy baseball, and, it seems like back in 2019, before the season, that the Rockies had like a lot of younger talent that was coming up, and, you know, McMahon, Hampson, like all these guys who seemed like they were going to be the future. And from where I'm sitting, it seemed like none of that really panned out as quickly as they would have liked. But I don't know much about the farm system for the Rockies. Is there just nobody else in the wings?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. So that's the thing. Like after Brendan Rodgers graduated off of the Rocky, you know, off of their top prospects list. I mean, yeah, you can go in and look on any kind of respected, you know, prospect rankings list, whether it's MLB Pipeline or Baseball America, Baseball Prospectus. But yeah, they consistently, you know, rank the Rockies at this point in, you know, 27th, 28th in baseball in their farm system. It used to be really pretty good. But I mean, you know, like you said, all these guys that were supposed to come up and have an impact for the Rockies, you know, Raimel Tapia, Ryan McMahon, you know, Garrett Hampson, these guys, you know, I mean, and also, you know, part of the reason why they didn't really pan out is because they weren't really given ample opportunities to. I mean, Ryan McMahon, I mean, I can't tell you how many times that guy was yo-yoed between the, you know, the big league roster and AAA Albuquerque. Same with Raimel Tapia. I mean, Tapia didn't even really get a full look at the major league level until this year, when they had slotted him into the leadoff spot and he started to actually hit pretty well. Imagine that, right? You give the guy consistent playing time and he finally starts to hit. But I mean, this is the problem, you know, essentially with the Rockies organization as well. I mean, you know, you got guys like Daniel Murphy and Matt Kemp starting over the young prospects that need consistent playing time. Ian Desmond, you know, starting over Ryan McMahon at first base, you know, and this is why, you know, this is part of the reason why these guys haven't been able to produce, you know, like we've seen other guys from, you know, their draft classes and other guys their age produce for other teams.
Yeah. And we saw Ian Desmond today basically say he's not playing baseball this year. So is that just like another kick in the teeth for the nation, for the Rockies nation? I mean, what did you feel like when you saw that today? I mean, that's pretty rough.
Yeah. So Ian Desmond has had, to put it, you know, to put it as an understatement, he's had a very tumultuous time with the Rockies. I mean, you know, the dude signed a 5-year contract for $70 million. Let me see. I wrote this down. They signed him leading into the 2017 season. I just wanted to make sure that I had it right. But leading into the 2017 season, they signed him to a 5-year, $70 million contract. He played 3 of those years. Obviously, he opted out last year, and it looks like he's not going to play this year. He said, at least for now, he's not going to. But I probably don't, you know, I don't see him coming back to play this year. But Ian Desmond, I mean, you know, I've said it on my podcast, you know, if he was as good a baseball player as he was a person, you know, he'd be at Mike Trout level. You know, Ian Desmond is just a phenomenal human being. I mean, you saw last year, you know, he opted out, you know, mostly due to, coronavirus concerns, but also, you know, to go and help rebuild, you know, baseball fields in his hometown of Sarasota, Florida, where, you know, they've really fallen into disarray, you know, and, you know, he also opted out, you know, in the wake of all the social, the social injustice that was going on last year too, that really came to the forefront. But I mean, you know, he never panned out on the field. He posted, you know, negative Fangraphs wins above replacement values in all 3 of his years at the Rockies. He was a ground ball machine, which is not something you want from a hitter who calls Coors Field home for 81 games a year. And so, I mean, you know, there's a lot of Ian Desmond hate and a lot of vitriol on social media. I mean, I wish Ian Desmond nothing but the best. It looks like this will, you know, he won't play another game for the Rockies. He does have a club option for next year, but they can also buy him out for $2 million, which I think they'll probably do. I mean, with Ian Desmond, you know, I wish him the best. He was never a great baseball player for the Rockies. But I mean, all those kind of, you know, cliches about the clubhouse presence. I mean, that's all true. You know, he's just a great leader, and that's part of the reason why they signed him.
I mean, a lot of people are saying this is just another way of him saying he's retiring from baseball. And I have to believe, I mean, you're right. His seasons with the Rockies were pretty subpar, and I don't know who picks him up. I mean, if you can't have a good offensive season in Colorado, you know, what are you doing? So do you feel, is there any buzz that this is it for him?
Yeah, I mean, it probably will be. I mean, I don't actually know exactly how old he is. I'd have to look that up real quick. But
he's 55 years old.
I'd imagine he's, you know, he's coming up into his 30s. And I mean, obviously, you know, teams have really seen, you know, him just beat the ball into the ground on a consistent basis in over 3 years with the Rockies. And that's just not conducive to being, you know, an above average offensive player. And so, I mean, you know, maybe some team takes a flyer on him for a 1-year deal, you know, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, he's played his last game for the Rockies, I would imagine. You know, obviously I would love to see him get an opportunity somewhere else. He's a phenomenal guy. You know, I wish him nothing but the best, but it just didn't work out for him in Colorado.
Well, yeah, we know this story pretty well. We've been through it a lot. And, you know, we also went through it a fair amount with manager Bud Black. I mean, what's your opinion after having the Bud Black experience for a couple years now? I mean, where are you and where would you say the fan base is on him? Speak for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I'll do my best to speak for everybody. At least for me. I mean, Bud Black is really one of the best managers, you know, I think that the Rockies have had in their brief history since 1993. I mean, obviously he's a former pitcher, you know, that's probably why he was so attractive to the club, is to be able to, you know, work with the pitching staff in such a hostile environment, you know, that they call home, you know, at 5,280 feet above sea level. But I mean, Bud Black, I mean, he's a phenomenal dude, you know, I mean, and it's actually kind of funny, you know, I had never really been into watching post game manager press conferences until they had hired Bud Black. You know, I mean, really? He's just like, you know, a super phenomenal guy. You know, he's a funny guy. He's a great baseball, you know, mind, you know, he really helped out with the pitching staff. Overall, you know, Bud Black is like way super low on the list of problems that the Rockies have right now. But you know, one of the issues that he does, you know, that I have noticed with Bud Black is what I mentioned earlier about him, you know, tending to favor the veteran players over, you know, giving the younger prospects consistent playing time. And you know, I actually went and looked up a game I did want to bring up. Because it was a Rockies versus Padres game at Coors Field in 2020. Okay. And you know, this, I feel like just perfectly encapsulates it. So this happened on July 31st of last year, when Wade Davis had just blown a save. He allowed four runs in the top of the ninth. I think it was Tommy Pham that hit a two run homer or something, you know, to give the Padres that lead. But then in the bottom of the ninth, the Rockies, you know, had a pretty great one and two out rally. They had pulled it to within 8-7. And then, you know, Kirby Yates had been pulled. He was the one who was giving up all those runs and walking in guys. And the Padres had put in Drew Pomeranz. And the Rockies had a choice. They could either go with Sam Hilliard, who's a left-handed hitter, against Drew Pomeranz, who's a left-handed pitcher, or they could go with Chris Owings, who's a right-handed hitter, but a drastically, you know, subpar hitter to Sam Hilliard, who's an upcoming, up and coming prospect. But Bud Black chose Chris Owings to take that last at bat with the bases loaded and two outs over Sam Hilliard, purely because of that righty lefty matchup. And of course it didn't work out because Chris Owings isn't a good hitter. But I mean, that just kind of, you know, perfectly encapsulates, you know, kind of the issue that we've seen from Bud Black in, you know, kind of favoring the veterans over, you know, the prospects and giving the prospects consistent playing time.
See, this is how it starts.
Yep, I was about to say, how many years before you turn on Bud Black?
Listen to Travis's voice.
I'm not turning on Bud Black here. I love Bud Black. I think overall he's been a net positive for the team.
Oh, you'll get there. Don't worry. You'll get there.
Well, the pitching, I mean, is this like this obviously is a thing for the Rockies fan base and just people covering the team. I mean, you can build a great team around, you know, you can build a great core of players, but the pitching is just, you never know, right? I mean, these guys just, their mental makeup gets destroyed by playing there. Is that just the story of the Rockies, basically? Like, the pitching just cannot be solved.
I mean, you know, we've seen pitching be solid over the course of a full season.
That's true.
At Colorado, like taking 2018 when Kyle Freeland literally finished fourth in the Cy Young voting. Mm-hmm. He had posted the lowest qualified single season ERA since Marvin Freeman did it in like 19 something or other. I don't remember the exact year, but Kyle posted a 2.88 ERA that season. And he was a huge part in the Rockies making the playoffs. Like, the Rockies do not make the playoffs in 2017 and 2018 without that young pitching staff. And, you know, the group that they've built right now is generally widely regarded as one of the best pitching staffs in team history, at least the starting rotation, you know, with Germán Márquez, who actually was a throw-in from Tampa Bay in the Corey Dickerson and Jake McGee trade. But I mean, you know, Márquez has been just this phenomenal strikeout guy. Kyle Freeland, you know, I mean, he had that phenomenal 2018 season, had a rough go of it in 2019, but was able to kind of bounce back last year. And we've seen John Gray do really well against the Padres. Yeah. I'm sure you guys are sick of seeing John Gray pitch against the Padres. I mean, he's he's had, you know, a couple of rough seasons, but I mean, we've seen what John Gray can do. But I mean, the pitching staff is, you know, they've been behind the Rockies two playoff appearances, you know, in this current quote unquote contention window that seems to be pretty slammed firmly shut at this point. But the Rockies don't make the playoffs without their pitching staff.
Yeah. We're going to get you out of here real soon, but you know, what do you think about the Dodgers and Padres arms race that's happening? I mean, it does seem like it's a two-horse race this year in the NL West. You're in the NL West house. Who do you think's going to win? Huh?
Honestly, you know, that's a really great question.
Be smart.
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, right after, the Padres just got done making all these, you know, fantastic signings, you know, and trades. I had tweeted out, you know, it's almost comical how much space there is between the Dodgers and the Padres and the other three teams in the NL West. Yeah. And, you know, that was illustrated by the playoff odds that Fangraphs had released, where, you know, the Dodgers and the Padres are at what, like 95 and 92%. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is sitting around at like, you know, 2, 5, and 10% in the NL West.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world.
Yeah, seriously. But I mean, honestly, you know, even with all these fantastic signings that the Padres have made, I mean, you know, I need to see it play out over the full season before I'm ready to crown them over the Dodgers. You know, right, I mean, we've seen fantastic off seasons not work out in the past, you know, not necessarily going after the Padres, but just in general, the division is won on the field. It's not won on paper. So, you know, you have to kind of wait and see how all this plays out over the course of the season. Obviously, you know, it'll be a super fantastic, you know, division race to watch. And I'm super excited, honestly, to be able to watch it. But I mean, at this point, I mean, you know, I just have to, you know, still give it to the Dodgers, you know, until you actually see the Padres overtake them.
That was the wrong answer, Ryan. I'm sorry. You gave the wrong answer.
Oh, well. You
had a lot going for you this segment. Hey, Ryan, thanks for coming on. You're the first guest of the NL West House, something we're going to try to keep going throughout the season. Hopefully you can come back on when we've played you for the fourth time and we're sick of both teams are sick of looking at each other and we can
and call scoring, you back and scoring 100 runs total at Coors Field.
Gotta love it.
Right. Well, you can follow Ryan Latica on Twitter at Ryan Latica and check out the Locked On podcast network and check out Locked On Rockies. You know, it's a good thing to check out. They're pretty short episodes daily. And if you ever want to check in to see how the other fan bases are doing, you know, what they're talking about, check it out. It's a cool model that the Locked On Network's put together, and Ryan's a part of that. So check out his Twitter and, you know, say hi to him on Twitter if you want.
Yeah, you can also follow my show at LO Rockies as well on Twitter too. So
Oh yeah. That's right. Okay. And well, check out the KeptFaith.com and KeptFaith IG and KeptFaith Facebook and check out what we're doing. We're really going to start ramping up our content with the season coming around the corner. Dallas, do you got anything to promote or?
No, just listen Padres Canon once a week on the Kept Faith feed, and that's it.
All right. We'll see you next week. Keep the faith.